The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole.
This is Gary Heasley once again with the conservative voice on WWDB AM 860. Thanks for joining us once again on what is yet again a beautiful Friday afternoon.
Beautiful Friday afternoon.
It's gorgeous out there.
Yes.
We go through the lineup today a little bit. We have with us on phone Ada Nestor. Ada, welcome.
Hello, glad to be here today. Super excited. It's a beautiful day. I agree with you both.
It really is. It's gorgeous out there. And as a special treat, we have with us in the studio, Mina Quarles. Good afternoon, Mina.
Good afternoon, Gary and Ada. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. And this is going to be a fun show again. You know, we've continued to get great guests, continue to have a lot to talk about. We've been fortunate to live in interesting times. So we had planned at 12:30 to have Chad Wolf join us again. Okay. For reasons that I think we'll all be able to understand one day soon. Chad is suddenly unavailable. So Rob Law is going to join us, who also was in the Trump administration, the first Trump administration, and will help us talk a little bit more about what exactly is going to happen as we go forward to implement the changes that everyone is demanding in this mandate that was done. At 1 o'clock, we've got Mark Mitchell calling in from Rasmussen Reports. Now, Rasmussen is the pollster that we use all the time. We use their materials in town halls. We've used their materials on the air here. This is the first time we've had anyone from Rasmussen join the show. Looking forward to that tremendously. And then at 1:30, we're going to take calls, as we like to do in that last segment. But we also have some folks that are going to call in, and we're going to specifically explore how it is that the Catholic vote in Philadelphia turned out in bigger numbers than normal or than, you know, customary for Donald Trump, because we've seen articles about this. We've talked about it with people, and we're going to have a couple folks join us who are from Philadelphia who were involved in connecting with the Catholic community here. So that's the plan for the show. And
just a reminder real quick for anyone listening online or who are outside of the Philadelphia area and want to watch the show or listen to the show, they can catch us on TC Voice WWDB on Twitter. We are live right now.
And thanks for that, Ada. That's right. And, you know, we are streaming on X now because it just allows us to reach people who maybe couldn't hear us on live broadcast. You know, it's yet another way to reach people, and this is all about reaching people. When we think about what's happened and what's gone on in these last 4 years to get us to a point where Donald Trump actually wins an election, it's been quite a journey, and a big piece of it is reaching people, as Trump proved. So I suppose this is the point at which we have a little celebration for people that were working hard for Donald Trump to get elected and are pleased that he has been elected again. It's just a great day.
It's a great day, Gary. Oh my gosh, it's just a great day, and a day that I think a lot of people will never forget. To see that President Trump was down 4 years ago and now has returned is just so amazing.
It is, as everyone has been saying, it is the greatest political comeback story of any modern era. I mean, I'm sure at some point in history there was something similar to this. I just can't imagine what it was. And go ahead.
Think about what Mina and John and folks like them in the city did this year. I mean, 82% of the precincts in Philadelphia shifted towards Trump. That is a huge number. And it is because of the people who were on the corners waving the flags, knocking on doors, handing out signs. I would say that you guys should take a round of applause and a bow for the hard work you did this year. It is changing hearts and minds all over the place, and we see that clearly now.
Ada, thank you so much. It was a joy and a pleasure to do it. I mean, to see seniors come out and want to be a part of it, bringing their chairs to sit out because they can't stand so long, or seeing young children supporting their parents and supporting President Trump and saying that we had a 8-year-old say to us that we can't do it without President Trump. That was totally amazing, and it just warms my heart, and a great fight. And I'm glad that we were a part of it.
It was a great fight. Yeah. And I heard a story last night. We did a Keystone Town Hall last night again, and it was a great crowd, great turnout. And it was interesting. The tone of it was celebratory. Everybody was very excited. But it wasn't giddy, right? It wasn't elated. It wasn't people, you know, the left always tries to portray us, anybody who supports Donald Trump, as a cultist.
Yeah.
You know, we're all supposed to vote for him because he was on some TV show sometime, whatever. Of course, that's not the way these people are. The people who supported Donald Trump supported him because of the policies Donald Trump implemented when he was president, and they expect those policies to be reinvigorated.
Yes,
I don't think the expectation is that it's going to be incrementalism. In other words, small little bits and steps. No. The people in this country that voted for Donald Trump are now expecting significant, rapid change, just as the left would do. And when you think about Philadelphia, you had five precincts or districts, wards, I'm sorry, five wards that voted for Trump, and two of those had voted for Biden last time, right?
Yes.
So he flipped two wards in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And, you know, Ada, you made the comment about knocking doors and flag waving. This wasn't a digital campaign. This wasn't pop-up ads and tech. This was door knocking, hard work, and of course, Trump marketing through all the channels he did, Joe Rogan, all these crazy things, Theo Vaughn, and coming to Philadelphia to fill that arena. Do you remember the name of the arena? I never
do. Yes, the Leo Kors Center.
Filling that arena to capacity, you know, in the middle of enemy territory.
Yes.
Where other presidential candidates would not come.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of people don't come.
Yeah.
So it was very much a direct connect with the people movement.
Yes.
You know,
I agree with that assessment.
It's hard to hate people if they're in front of you and you see them as just another human being. You have to go out there and meet people. You have to talk to people. You have to meet them where they are and find out what their most important topics are. And for everything digital and email and everything that has been done these last few elections, the one complaint I hear the most is the text messages. My goodness, thank God these text messages are going to be over now. Mine get quarantined because I don't have Apple, but that was the one complaint I heard from absolutely everyone. So it seems like getting down on the ground and getting out there and really engaging with people in a kind and loving way and explaining your positions and finding out what's important to them is the right way to go.
It turns out, you know, let's just touch on the results then. So he got 312 electoral votes, 270 to win, 73 million votes against her 68 million votes. The shift from last time was incredible. Now, McCormick also won that state Senate race, which was a really important race. He was ahead by 31,000 votes, and they still weren't calling it. And eventually, then they just said there just aren't enough votes left to flip that election back, so they called it. So now he's in, and the Senate has changed hands. Now, you think about the challenges in the first administration in getting anyone confirmed in the Senate. It was ridiculous. Yeah. It was pointless. Now those confirmations should move very quickly. So the challenge of filling the seats now will be constrained simply by the availability of people who are actual patriots, who really do support this American agenda, who support the Constitution, not in word, not in oath, but in deed.
Yes.
And getting those people identified, get them in front of the Senate, and getting them confirmed. It's going to be a much more rational policy.
Good.
Or rational process. But when you look at the numbers again, going back to 2016, 136.5 million votes were cast in this presidential race in 16 between Clinton and Trump. In 2020, it was 158 million votes cast. But then you come to this year and it's 141, just, you know, 4.5 million more than 2016.
So where'd they go?
What happened to these 18 million votes?
Yeah.
Where did they go?
Weird. Super odd.
It is very strange that 18 million people that appeared out of the ether to vote in 2020 disappeared again in 2024. Now,
and think about the fact that if they had thought they did a good job demonizing him in 2020 to, you know, win that race, if everyone wants to believe that's what happened, he's now a quote unquote convicted felon.
Right.
And so many people sat it out, stayed home. I don't think so.
When you look at a graph of these and 2020 stands up at a, you know, huge number, it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Now, the good news there is that, you know, it's a majority, going back to Rasmussen reports, their polling of American opinions on election fraud show that it was a majority of Americans that believe election fraud was a factor in 2020 and that would again be a factor in 2024. So people were already convinced. But now that those votes disappeared, people are even more convinced. It's more obvious, even to people that weren't paying attention, that something very strange happened in 2020. So I think the idea of the stolen election is clear. And I'm really hopeful that Trump and this team now take that seriously. I would like to see an implementation of a nationwide ID requirement for federal elections. If they can't deal with the state and the local because of the legal structure, our federal system, fine. But for federal elections, we should require voter ID in every state.
I shared a video on Instagram today that compares the states that require no voter ID to vote and the states that Kamala Harris won this year. And lo and behold, they're identical. So, you know.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting.
Yeah. Every place she won, no voter ID.
No voter ID. Wow.
So I think we need voter ID. We need paper ballots. You know, I don't often say we should follow the French.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always a good plan. No. But the French did outlaw mail-in ballots. They eliminated mail-in ballots, and they did it because of fraud.
The mail-in ballots doesn't work. Being a person out there that door knocked and being in the space where people are actually voting, the mail-in ballots caused a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you know, but Philadelphia was one of the counties in the areas that had 3,000 mail-in ballots that had issues.
Mm-hmm.
And how did we contact those people to say we had issues? And those folks coming and saying, well, I was told I had an issue, don't know what the issue is, and then trying to have people who are serving the public to get their vote in decipher what that issue is. It's just very confusing. So I don't think mail-in ballots work.
No.
Honestly, if it was me, I would get rid of them and get back to the paper ballots and ID.
Well, they're extremely complicated. Again, let's just touch on the numbers for a moment.
Okay.
2020 in Philadelphia, there were 749,000 ballots cast, 374,000 or 49% were mail-in ballots. 49%. Roll forward to 2024, there were 35,000 fewer votes cast in Philadelphia, 35,000. And only 27% voted by mail-in ballot. The number of mail-in ballots cast in Philadelphia this time was 193,000.
And Gary, just a quick question. How much money did the Republican Party invest in getting out the vote via mail-in ballots this year?
Well, that's an interesting point, isn't it? That they invested something we were told, we haven't seen final numbers, I'm not sure how you could track it now, but between $7 and $10 million. And how much did they spend on state rep races? That's the number. Zero. So you know, these candidates are unfunded. They don't talk about issues, but boy, did they pour every resource into this mail-in ballot frenzy. And, you know, they created these long lines at these election services offices. Those aren't normal voting precincts, right? So, for example, if you look at Delaware County, it's a county of, I think, let's call it 550,000, 575,000 people, something like that. So they probably have, call it 375,000 active real voters, 350 to 375,000. So they have 428 polling places. So when you go to a precinct to vote, you got 428 choices. But if you're voting in advance by in-person mail-in ballot, as complicated a phrase as you can have, you've got three choices. You can vote at voter services, or you can vote at one of two satellite offices. Chester County is about 325,000 active voters, about 380,000 total on the rolls, but many of them inactive. So let's say 325,000 active. And to vote there, you have three choices if you're going to vote early by mail-in ballot. And it's a complicated process. So the mail-in ballot process is it's just so time-consuming. So, of course, they had multi-hour lines. What did you expect? But on Election Day in Chester County, you've got 230 places to vote. So you wait 20 minutes, 10 minutes, no minutes. And it's
easy. Our longest line was 45 minutes on Election Day.
Okay, so at your precinct. So
yeah.
What happened then is...
I didn't have 110% turnout like East Bradford, but we did have 88% turnout.
Well, turnouts were really high, and in a high turnout election, it's good to have 230 or 428. I don't know how many are in Philadelphia. It's got to be 1,000 precincts, something.
Yeah.
So you've got huge numbers of places to vote. Taking a cumbersome process and then doing it in person at these voter services offices was just not the plan of the original mail-in ballot design. There was no early vote design in this system.
It is the plan, though, if you're looking to centralize the process and control it by the voter services employees and take it out of the hands of the citizens, though.
If you want to eliminate the importance of the analog campaign element, right? Door knocking, handshaking,
yep.
Being at the precincts. If you want to get rid of that, and as happened in corporate America, you want to centralize the election process. So no one really has any idea what happened or what the support level, no one's engaged. All the money can stay within a very small number of people who can raise it all directly and keep it to themselves. If that's your goal, then you want to push mail-in ballots. And you know where you end up when you do that? Oregon. Oregon has one party, Democrat control. They put radicals in charge of their cities, radicals in charge of their state. Nothing, you know, is a beautiful state that no longer works.
Wow.
The people all feel disenfranchised. I say this all the time, talking to women in Oregon, this group called Women for Trump from 2020. And I asked them, why do you keep electing lunatics? And they said, well, we don't elect anybody. We've got mail-in ballots. They're just picked.
Wow.
Right? 25
and listen,
years.
There's a video, I will share it on our Twitter later this afternoon, of a poll worker in Delaware County talking about that plan.
Oh, really? See,
really?
That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, they know. I mean, you know, so the mail-in ballot thing, you know, you've heard this from election integrity groups now for 4 years. The mail-in ballots are bad. I don't know why the Republicans created them in 2009. Well, I do, Ada. It's just exactly what you said. They created them to centralize it. Why they think that's going to allow the Republican Party to remain relevant, you know, Washington, Colorado, Oregon, California, it's not. They're going to be irrelevant.
You know what's hilarious to me is, in my perception, watching everything that happened prior to the 2020 race, it sort of felt like the RINOs wanted to get rid of straight ballot voting so that they could get rid of or dispatch of Donald Trump without affecting the lower races. But if you look at the results in the state, it seems like they would have done much better if they had left straight ballot races, because people would have done that. And once they got into those lower level races, they made different decisions, but they voted for Donald Trump, clearly.
That's right. That's right.
So they shot themselves in their own feet to try and destroy this America First movement. And guess what? It's not going anywhere, and we are only gaining more support.
Yeah, that's right. And I heard that exact story several times, that they eliminated the straight party voting because they wanted to get rid of Donald Trump. I mean, I heard Republicans told me that. I didn't dream it up one night, right? And
yeah, they admitted it.
They admitted it. So they took the most popular candidate in modern history and organized an election system and allow them to sidestep him. And then he comes back. And as a result, Stacey Garrity gets elected to treasurer again. And she's great. I don't know if you know Stacey, but she's been on a great job. Tim DeFore, who's been a great auditor general, has written a great report everyone should look at in January 2023 about how school boards hide their money so they can justify unjustifiable tax increases. It's a brilliant report. They looked at about 12 different school districts.
Wow.
And what it revealed was something every taxpayer should know. Tim DeFore did a great job. Dave Sunday, now the attorney general. So now you've got a Republican attorney general and a Josh Shapiro administration. that changes things.
Yes.
And maybe this will be an attorney general that has an interest in election law.
Yeah.
Because that would be refreshing.
That would be very refreshing. I hope he is.
Yeah. So the tails that Donald Trump had, that they all were able to step on and ride along. You know, Stacey and Tim DeFore were doing very well even before Trump's climb in numbers, which is odd for a treasurer to have more votes than the Republican president. Or, you know, there are a lot of odd patterns in elections that we can talk about another time. but it's just incredible how he pulled so many people over the line.
Yeah.
Now, not so in Philadelphia, where there weren't a lot of elections won by Republicans or conservatives or constitutional patriots. And not so in Chester County, where, you know, there were basically two races out of all the races in Chester County, only two or one. I haven't looked at the Delaware County or Montgomery or some of the other counties to see where they shook out. But I don't think that the success necessarily transferred down to some of the county races.
Okay.
So let's just touch on Michigan.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, let's
do that.
Please touch on Michigan.
Let's do it.
It turns out that lots of different religions and people from different cultural backgrounds are really not cool with castrating children. Who knew? Amazing, amazing things we see.
Yes.
It's the one thing that we can say all religions got behind was the fact that we don't want you mutilating our children. And what a turnout that it is. What a turnout.
It's incredible. So in 2020, Michigan was 51% Joe Biden, 48% Donald Trump. Now it's 49.8% Trump and 48.3% Harris. You know, he picked up 200,000, 150,000 to 200,000 votes in Michigan. And then you say, well, wait a minute, but where?
Right.
Well, let's look at Dearborn, right?
Dearborn, Michigan.
Dearborn, Michigan.
Good grief.
All right.
Yeah.
So to say,
you know what, though? We saw something coming with them because a year or two ago, they started going to their school board meetings in droves. Just everyone in the community started going to these school board meetings. And their meetings, I watched them from here in PA because they were just so exciting to watch, finally having them stand up and say exactly what we've been saying. So there were signs that things were going to go a little different, but I had no idea it was going to go this far.
No, I didn't either. In the 2020 census, 54.5%, that's a majority, 55% of the residents of Dearborn are Middle Eastern or North African, many of them Arab, and that's from the census. Well, of course, I didn't find the religious affiliation for these folks, but we know that Dearborn is heavily Muslim, majority Muslim, right? It's a Muslim city. And in 2020, Trump got 11% of the vote in Dearborn. 11. In 2024, he got 43%.
Yep.
43. Harris got 36. Jill Stein picked up 18. Somehow, you know, they like Jill Stein. It's fascinating. But Donald Trump got 43% of the vote, four times the tally he got last time.
Wow.
Four times. That's an incredible performance. Now, everybody who's been listening to the show knows Darren Gobb, right? Darren is a great friend of the show. We love having him on. He brings us great insights into geopolitical matters and domestic political matters because he's a chair of a county party. Well, he went to New York and he was on NTD doing election coverage. NTD, which is affiliated with Epoch Times. It's great, great shows they have on that channel. So he's put up a post on X. 500 Bangladeshis came together Tuesday night in Queens to watch and celebrate the election. The Uber driver who picked me up at the airport on Tuesday leads this group. Now he's driving me around Queens on Thursday to meet people. The local Yemeni community is the same. So you got Darren Gobb, right, this conservative constitutional patriot who's driving around Queens with a guy from Bangladesh to meet the other Bangladeshis who are all celebrating Donald Trump's election. Can we finally admit that this racist lie is dead? Is
yes.
It just dead?
It's dead. We got to stop leading with this race thing and realize that we're all Americans and we're all here fighting for the same goal and to give us a better quality of life. That's what our fight is. Racism is dead. Stop
right.
Using it.
And the Muslims in Dearborn, the Bangladeshis in Queens, you know, anybody from an Eastern Bloc country. And when you look at the Hispanic male and the black voters and how their numbers changed, I think it's time to say we're Americans again.
Yeah,
now,
we're Americans.
There is one demographic, though, that I don't care what he does. Trump is never going to be able to reach the phantom voters, the 18 million that disappeared. They're out. We don't even know how to contact them. Where do these people live? You know, the phantom voter block we can't get. So luckily they didn't turn out this time. Now, why they didn't turn out? What happened to the 18 million phantom voters from 2020? Well, what I believe happened is 4 years of election integrity efforts by people all over the country. What I believe happened is that the incredible work done on election law by citizens, not the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, certainly not the government, the work on voter rolls to clean them up, which we know were terrible, right? Getting like a state like Ohio to get rid of the ERIC system, which is a system that's supposed to make your voter rolls better, but every state that uses it has a higher rate of fraud in their voter rolls than the states that don't, right? 4 years of that, and then the Trump campaign, it seems, really was behind the scenes focused on fighting election fraud this time. I don't know what they did exactly, but it's clear that the Trump team had a role.
I think the 8 p.m. deadline in Pennsylvania did it. Them saying that they could not accept any ballots, even if, because previously it was postmarked by election day, so it gave them that cushion to elect or accept ballots later on. But this year it was 8 p.m. Your ballot needs to be here, not postmarked on November 5th, here so we can count it. And I think that really tied their hands in some ways.
That's interesting. And didn't the Supreme Court of Georgia also rule that they couldn't keep counting ballots for days after the election?
Yes.
They couldn't keep accepting ballots?
Yes. And I think the deadline changed as well. Like October 21st was the deadline to have your ballot in. So I think all of those things helped make this better, mm-hmm. make it a better process.
Well, you know, it's incredible to see America come together. Now, the way we've been doing the math in our town halls and on this show and on other shows is you know, looking at this mass formation psychosis analysis that Matthias Desmond did, looking at some of the polls, who thought Harris was a good vice president, how many people was that, you know, who has faith in corporate media now down to 32%. That's a Gallup poll they've been doing for decades. You look at all these numbers and you kind of vector in on about 35% of the country that would vote for anything they're told to vote for. An old truck tire, they'd vote for a bird, you know, a stray cat. Anything. A guy in his basement, anything. So that's about 35%. You got, in my estimation, about 5% of the country are just mercenaries who would burn the country down if they could make a dollar doing it. I think we've seen that with the exportation of much of our industry. We've seen that with the way our government policies have been implemented, just as a simple mechanism to transfer wealth from the citizen to this small sector of people. You know, I think we've seen plenty of that 5% that I think is the number for these sort of, you know, mercenaries. No ideology. They don't care what your policies are. They just want cash. And then I think that leaves about 60% of the country that really is unified and that they want safety for their families. They want a nation that is secure. They want security. They want the border defended, right? They want prosperity. They want to have the same kind of economic opportunities that their grandparents and parents had, right? Yeah. And we see those going away. And then most of all, they want freedom. They want their constitution back. They want freedom of speech. They want the freedom to carry firearms and defend themselves. They want the freedom to assemble. They want all these freedoms that over the last few years, at some point or another, from the lockdowns to the censorship, have been taken away.
Yeah.
They want their constitution back.
Yeah.
That's about 60% of the population. And Trump, in his incredible ability as a marketer, smashed all of the standard ways campaigns are run, went over the top of them, and he ends up, you know, he ends up doing the French fry thing. That McDonald's appearance was classic. Right? The golden shoes, I mean,
awesome.
I'm probably not in the market for the golden shoes. That's something I'm going to wear, right?
No, same.
I might put them on a shelf.
Right.
But I'm probably not going to be wearing the golden shoes. But what incredible marketing. And so, you know, the dump truck, they call us names. You turn around and then you've got him going on the Theo Von podcast. The Joe Rogan podcast was important.
Yes.
The Theo Von podcast. This guy is not a political animal,
right?
He's had more politicians on, but he has a reach into a market that Donald Trump could not reach any other way. So he used every available platform and went in as deep as he could and reached voters he couldn't reach otherwise. So now the corporate media's stranglehold, the false depictions of him as a racist and an evil guy and a guy that wants to hurt girls. Somebody posted on X, he's going to come for their daughters in the night. I mean, the lunacy, that kind of dissipates when the people can see him for themselves on a 3-hour Joe Rogan podcast a week before Election Day.
Imagine being that frightened that your daughter won't be able to abort your grandchild. I mean, if you break it down, think about that. Imagine I will take that grandchild and raise that grandchild and help you do so. But I don't understand the hysteria over that issue. I can't afford to be worried about that. I need to be able to afford my groceries.
You know, these are really good points. Now, the great news is, and we'll talk a lot more about this election, but the great news is that now we all get to shift our attention to what comes next. What are the changes to be made and how will they be made? And of course, we always like to get insight from folks to help us unravel these mysteries. And so on the line right now, we have Rob Law. Rob, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Oh, it's great to be with you today in a post-Invictorian environment.
Yeah, isn't that something? I mean, did you think it was going to happen? Were you skeptical? What did you think was coming?
No, I've got to tell you, I was supremely confident that this is exactly how it was going to unfold. I think the writing was on the wall. You had 4 years of failures. You had a coup for a presidential nominee that was not earned. And you had the Republican Party embrace early voting in a way that you've never seen before, combined with attorneys on the ground in the key battleground states to achieve victory ahead of time before any shenanigans could happen. All the griping on the sidelines in 2020 and trying to challenge it after the fact was always going to be a failure. And so just all of those things, you had the right policies, you had the right infrastructure, and you had the right ground game. And it led to a resounding victory for President Trump and the America First movement.
Yeah, it was incredible. And the ground game, you know, I went to three events Saturday before the election. I went first to a Trump bus stop, you know, where Kash Patel was speaking and Peter Navarro and these other folks that are really amongst our community household names. And they did a great job of rallying the troops. They were out there all the time. They were the Trump campaign was doing in Southeast Pennsylvania, clearly a target, not just that he did a rally in down here in Philly, which, you know, was powerful, but they were doing 2 to 4 events a week out here. Two to four events a week in Southeast Pennsylvania at universities, at town halls, at manufacturing facilities with J.D. Vance. It was incredible, the presence here.
It was.
And you had the different grassroots coming out and having their own events, too. You had the Stand with Women with Tulsi Gabbard. You had Turning Point going to Westchester University with Vivek and Charlie Kirk, although I think Charlie wasn't there that day. Like, there was just so much working together from these different grassroots organizations to try and bring the message to a new community who I feel we've been sort of ignored for a long time because we seemed so unattainable, this area. But clearly, that's changing.
Yes. So I went to this Trump bus stop, and then I went down to join Mina on the sidewalks of Philadelphia for a flag wave. And it turns out Mina and John, who was on with us last week, the week before, John McCauley, who's been on a bunch, who does What You Scared to Say podcast, who was with us for the walk in Kensington we did. Mina was with us as well. I go down there and it's the same energy that I saw at the Trump bus stop in a different, you know, an hour away. The energy on the sidewalk was fantastic. And then I find out they've been doing these flag waves since June. Now, no one in the campaign knows that. No one's coordinated that. It's just citizens stepping forward and saying, I'm getting in this fight.
Yes.
Then I went to a Trump unity event, which was organized by the Log Cabin Republicans.
Yes.
Now, for those that don't know, the Log Cabin Republicans are gay conservatives. And this was the best run event ever. And I got to tell you, these guys, I think their jeans were tailored. They had tailored jackets. These guys, oh, the hair.
Nice hair.
I think they have like personal beard trimmer. These dudes look good, right? But this was the best run event. There must have been 11 speakers, which generally I don't like. It's too many. Yeah. But it was great.
It was awesome.
I don't even know who most of the guys were, but it was great. So that was organized outside the campaign. So, Rob, when you talk about infrastructure, the things you mentioned were there, and then this massive movement, and it is a movement, this massive movement, even outside of that, completely unfunded, you know, citizens doing on their own time and dime, who supplemented the great work done by Trump and his campaign.
Well, absolutely right. And I just think it goes to show that, you know, the American people have rejected all of the institutions that have tried to exert control over them for the last 4 years. If you think back to the mask mandates and the vaccination mandates, the ways that they were crippling your ability to just go about your daily lives with freedom. And, you know, the American people didn't forget about that. And oftentimes, you know, we have so many things going on and you forget, oh, that was a couple of years ago. But people remember and how distraught people were and how much their lives have suffered. And so, of course, you're going to have an organic aspect of it. And this time around, that manifested itself in actual votes cast. I think previously you had a lot of enthusiasm at rallies and things of the sorts that didn't turn into actual votes cast. And it's cool to be at a rally and all of that, but you actually got to cast your vote to help, you know, carry the day. And the American people of all walks of life across the country, you know, turned out for Donald Trump. And, you know, the down ticket victories as well is going to give him a Senate that is going to enable him to get the cabinet that he deserves, to get people and judges confirmed into important positions. And it's looking like a Congress that will give him the legislative victories and get, kind of end some of the stalemates that have occurred over the last couple of years.
And you can see the response from other world leaders or even other leaders inside the United States to the clear mandate that Trump was given by us giving him the Senate and the House as well. You see the mayor of New York City ending the funding program for the migrants in the city. You see Gavin Newsom trying to do some things in California in advance of Trump coming back, but then you also have Putin and Xi ready to renormalize relations and talk about bringing down the conflict in Ukraine, as well as Netanyahu in Israel. So there's so many things, even just as a second day, you know, electee who has not yet taken office, these things are having real effects on everyday people already.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it just goes to show that what we've suffered through has been a choice, that all of these things were solvable. And President Trump was out there on the campaign trail saying, you know, I will end the Russia-Ukraine conflict on, you know, day one or day two. And people scoffed at it. But look, he's just the president-elect now. He has no, you know, actual authority of the White House. And yet people already know what's going to happen because they take him seriously, and they just have not taken the Biden-Harris administration seriously. Again, turning off the taxpayer-funded money to illegal aliens. That was a choice to give it to them in the first place. It was a choice to continue giving it to them. And now here you go. You're finally a recognition that this is a terrible incentive to encourage illegal immigration. It is a disastrous misuse of taxpayer funds. And so you're going to see a house that's cleaned up very quickly across so many issues. Obviously, the border issue and illegal immigration is near and dear to my heart, and I'm excited about what's coming in that realm. But I think you're going to see a commitment to domestic energy and just areas across the board. And of course, let's not discount, you know, make America healthy again, because right, when you have a healthy and functioning society and engaged citizenry, that will just rise all tides. Everything is easier for you in life when you are healthy.
Right.
Do you think we're going to see self-deporting before he takes office in January, or do you think that there's going to have to be a large-scale coordinated effort to kind of get us back to a point where at least we can get rid of the convicted criminals that have come into our country?
I think it'll be both of those, to be honest with you. I think you will have some element of the illegal alien population that sees the writing on the wall, and they would rather leave on their own terms, and they should.
Yes.
They've been in violation of our laws, many for a number of years, and so their time is up, and it's the right thing to do is to leave. And that by doing that themselves, that frees up our resources to target those criminal aliens. Now, that's a population that's not going to, you know, self-deport. But the more resources that ICE can spend and state and local law enforcement can spend on identifying, apprehending criminal aliens and deporting them at unprecedented large numbers, that makes American community safe. It restores, you know, the rule of law, and it just sends a signal that our immigration system can function when you actually just apply the laws that are on the books.
Rob, though, exactly right. Agreed. But we already see governors coming out and saying, we're going to protect our illegal aliens. We're going to protect, you know, Trende Aragua and all these other groups that they've brought in. They're already coming out.
Real quick, I literally saw someone on a call yesterday say they were going to hide them in their attics.
Yes.
To continue. Yes.
Yeah. And so there is a... There is going to be a concerted effort to fight and stop the implementation of the policies the American people demand. That's clear. We know that. Letitia James came out and said, I will use my power in this office to frustrate this government. You know, I'll go after Donald Trump. I'm trying to paraphrase it, but, you know, I will go after Donald Trump just as I did in the past. I'll use the lawfare. That was her message. Now, there was a response to her, which was, don't dare do it. Because we're not going to just accept these kinds of things this time. We're going to come at you hard. The question, Rob, is you were on the inside, right? You saw the inside. Is this going to be an effort of incrementalism where, you know, they take out five people in Department of Education and say, look, we've downsized? Is it going to be, you know, a creeping slow process? Or do you expect this to be a fast and sort of broad and bold move? How do you see this unfolding?
Well, I think you're going to see a big splash on a lot of fronts early. Now, getting to the totality of success is going to take some time. Like, for example, mass deportations are not going to happen overnight. But just letting ICE do its job and stacking removals day after day after day, which is what ICE should be doing and has not been allowed to do, will start to have an impact. And then as you get the personnel and the policies going, you'll then start to see the numbers will really start to skyrocket. And then the American people will notice that because their communities will be safer. Their schools and hospitals will not be overrun. Again, you're going to prioritize criminal aliens, but nobody is going to be off limits. And so if you live in the same house as a criminal alien and ICE comes to get the criminal alien and there's 10 other people there, they're going to take the other 10 as well and return them to their home countries. Incrementalism was, I think, an effort in the first administration. Mm-hmm. And frankly, we just don't have enough time for that. I think you have better people surrounding President Trump this time around, a lot of lessons learned, and you're going to see a series of policies coming out very early in President Trump's second term. And the impact will be swift at the border and in the interior, as far as when it comes to illegal immigration.
You know, in the first term, when the House and Senate were both controlled by Republicans, the White House was controlled, and we were all told, give us the House, the Senate, and the White House, and we will fix it. So we did. We gave it to them, and they didn't fix it. In fact, you know, there was a lot of show and no go. There were a lot of hearings where people got great clips for Fox News that made them seem like they were fighting, and then they eventually got Fox News jobs. But they didn't actually change anything. They didn't use their subpoena powers. They didn't use a lot of their powers. And they just let this machine keep going. And they frustrated, I'm talking about Republicans, frustrated Donald Trump's efforts to implement these policies. Is the party more unified today around this agenda that the American people have demanded? You know, it was Democrats that helped get Trump elected this time. It was independents. It was, you know, these people in Dearborn we talked about, the people of Philadelphia. Turned out he got 5% more of the vote this year in Philly than he got in 2016. You know, it's just a tremendous increase. So now the people have demanded it. Is the Republican Party going to support this agenda and help Trump achieve his goals? Do you got a view on that?
I think so. And I certainly still have the scars from, you know, that first 2 years of the Trump administration when, you know, Congress let us down where we needed legislation. But, you know, you have to remember at that time, Trump was a complete political outsider.
Yes.
A lot of people discounted him, still shocked that he had won in 2016. He has completely remade the party. And so the members that won on Tuesday and many of the senators that have won ever since President Trump's first, you know, victory, mm-hmm. those are Donald Trump Republicans. Those are America First Republicans. And so that old guard of, you know, corporatist establishment Republicans, they're kind of being phased out. And of course, there's always going to be some of those. But I think overall, you now have, you know, a Congress, at least the Republicans, that are going to try to deliver for President Trump and actually prioritize his agenda and not their own agenda.
Well, I hope that's true, because I got to tell you, last night I played at a town hall the Letitia James comment where she said, I'm going to do everything I can to fight this administration. Paraphrase, you can watch the video. And then I played the attorney, whose name's escaped me right now, who came back and said, no, we're not going to accept that. This is a different game, and we're going to play hardball. And the crowd erupted in applause and cheers. The American people aren't interested in good hits on Fox News. They're not interested in congressional theater, right? So I hope you are correct. I think that the way Trump managed this campaign, rather than in 16 and 20 going around the Republican Party, which resisted him at many levels, certainly in Pennsylvania, there was a lot of resistance. This time, he just forced himself through the Republican Party. And I think there was a bit of a transformational impact there. I also think a lot of the people who just got elected know that without his coattails, they would not have won. So I think you may be right, and this party may be unified. If it isn't, there will be a rebellion among the voters. There's just no question. The voters aren't going back to being complacent, I don't believe. I think that the voters are going to demand action. They're going to demand he be supported. And, you know, if a bunch of Kevin McCarthy's and McConnell's and Paul Ryan's are in there stopping it, I think they're going to get called out pretty quick.
I think you're right about that. There will definitely be accountability in the midterms if this Congress fails to deliver for President Trump. I'm supremely confident that what he can do with his executive authority, you'll see those results. But he can't do it all himself. Congress does have to play a role in our system.
Yes.
And they've been a grave disappointment for most of President Trump's time, maybe with the exception of, you know, getting some great justices and other federal judges confirmed. But it's more than just that. You know, you've got to pass certain bills, and you also got to stop passing certain bills that are not popular with the American people. You know, use that bandwidth appropriately and listen to what the American people are telling you, how they can get their lives back in order, how they can start affording groceries again, feeling safe, you know, walking their dog at night. Those are the types of things that they're looking for reforms. Yep. And not catering to special interests that may have donated, you know, to a campaign super PAC.
Right. Well, you mentioned, you know, Make America Healthy Again, right? MAHA. And you think about the power that those companies that control pharma and food have, not just because they control the media, but because they make huge numbers of, you know, huge amounts of political donations. It is crystal clear that the people are demanding that Trump is organizing around a mission to say the health of this population comes first, and your political donations and your bottom line profits come second, or maybe fifth, right? He's going to face tremendous corporate pushback on that. How do you overcome it?
There was an emergency meeting between the leaders of Big Pharma to try and discuss and game plan what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to proceed in that direction. That is the mandate. That was part of the deal here. The people coming over who were RFK Jr. supporters onto Trump's camp, it was with that mandate as well. And you have these American companies sending food that is less poisoned to other countries while poisoning our children with, you know, dyes and everything else.
Yeah, there was a second emergency meeting. European leaders meeting in Budapest urged Trump to support Ukraine and avoid trade wars. There is a panic in Europe that we will not continue to allow their perpetual trade deficits to support their economies and destroy our workforce, that we won't continue to pump money into their endless wars for all the profit and the globalist ambitions, the imperialist ambitions of the folks that want to take over Russia. You know, there's a tremendous amount of concern that Trump is somehow not going to slaughter as many people as possible and continue these trade deficits. So there is panic setting in all the right places.
But, right places is the right word.
It is. But that's going to result in tremendous pushback in that private sector and in these, you know, parasitic relationships we have with allies, you know, what we call allies who feed on us. Rob, do you have any thoughts on how that comes? I mean, How is he going to overcome that?
Oh, I mean, I just think if you look at what he's done and everything he's overcome just to get to this point, you know, he is not beholden to special interests the way so many other politicians are. And I think that's what makes him so uniquely prepared to deal with this. And it'll just turn into noise. And at the end of the day, I think that will start to, when you see that these corporate interests, the large companies that are trying to manipulate and influence everything, are losing their influence, you know, that'll start to, you know, I believe, benefit smaller companies, the real mom and pop industries that, you know, we used to hearken to and be so supportive of, and they've all kind of been shut out in favor of big corporations. So yes, the pressure will be there. There will be noise, but I think President Trump is clear-eyed about what he's intending to do with his, you know, with this last term. You know, this is his 4-year, you know, farewell call to, you know, the American political world. And I think he is, you know, going to deliver on all of the things that he said he was going to do. And, you know, I think these companies, if they want to continue to, you know, be profitable, they're going to have customers. And the American people, I think, are going to side with President Trump and his policies. And they may get quiet. Like, look at Jeff Bezos all of a sudden. He's singing a different tune.
Yes.
Mark Zuckerberg singing a different tune.
Yeah. Right.
You know, some of these other companies, they also may start singing a different tune, or they might start losing, you know, some of the preferential tax treatment or other things that they've depended upon for many, many years.
You know, yeah, there's another part of this that's different this time. You know, I kept saying before the election, but it's different this time. And one way was, of course, all the activism around election integrity, the work on the voter rolls and the laws and so on, all the things we talked about. It's also different this time in that the number of independent media outlets and their market share is so dramatically shifted. You know, the Joe Rogan interview was just a classic example of this, that in the old days of 6 years or 8 years ago, when you could just make a phone call to Fox, CBS, ABC, and NPR and say, listen, our foundation's going to make a donation to NPR and we're going to run some ads on CBS, and so we need you to run this story. They're going to keep doing that. But that media has lost its power. Axios did a story a couple of, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so now, and said, we've lost our ability to control the narrative around the election.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it turns out they figured it out, too. And
yeah.
And I think that when you say, Rob, that the American people are going to stand with him, you're right. And they're going to know what's going on, because now there's a massive amount of information flowing to them across platforms that either didn't exist, were controlled by the Democrat Party in the deep state, or were just co-opted. They've lost their power. People aren't going to ABC News to find out what the truth is. So now that you've got that platform, he's got not just his own tweets that were so reviled because he was going direct to the people and not going through that corporate media filter, but he's got that, but he's also got this army of people out here that are looking at everything and reporting on it on X, on Substack, on radio shows like this one, on podcasts. It's just a different communication landscape. That information now will get out faster, more loudly. I think that's going to have a big impact.
Yeah. The gatekeepers lost their power.
Yeah. So what's that, Ron?
Oh, I was going to say, that's right. And it started with Elon Musk buying Twitter, because if he hadn't done that, we may not have a president-elect Donald Trump today, because the amount of organized and orchestrated censorship of conservative thought and actual facts, you know, was just unprecedented and really un-American. And that's why the American people have lost confidence in all these institutions. News has lied to them. You know, social media has manipulated what they see to influence how they feel about things. And the American people saw that via the Twitter files and other things. And now they're starting to question everything. And I think that's an important, you know, turning point for us, that we're no longer just taking everything at face value.
That's right.
And that's where the accountability comes in.
Yeah, it's a different age. It's a different nation. It is a different population. When the swing states, what a story, right? There are seven states that are called swing states. We always hear the phrase, but I'm not sure everybody knows exactly what that means. There are seven states, and it is Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, and Arizona. How many of those did Trump carry?
All of them.
And four of those were flipped. We've got 1 minute left. Four of those were flipped from the 2020 race. Four. He carried all seven swing states. You know, it is a different country. It is a different time. We are in a remarkable time. This has been exciting. It's been stressful, but it's been an exciting 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, 15, if you've been paying real attention a long time. But it's just, it's remarkable where we are, and the opportunity to go forward and build this beautiful nation into what it can be is now in front of us. Rob, what else should we be thinking about? We got about a half second.
I just say, personnel is policy. And so now President Trump and Susie Wiles, which is a fantastic pick for chief of staff, they've got a staff, his administration, with actual loyalists, so he doesn't get betrayed like he did the last time around. And I think that there is a process in place to ensure that President Trump gets the team that he deserves.
Thank you, Rob.
And then that will deliver the results. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rob Law, America First Policy Institute, thanks once again for joining us on The Conservative Voice. We'll be back for the second hour in just a few minutes, folks.